Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time. You guys know the drill. If you've got questions for John, now is the time to text those in. 710-710 is our text line. You can text those in. We'll try to get some of your questions before we let them go for the day. Hello, John.
Hello, guys.
Hey, you know, we had Dave Craig on earlier, and it just fun guy to listen to.
Oh, yeah.
Fun guy, especially when he and Wyman are interacting. It's just they go off and do their thing. But just you covered this team for a long time. What do you have any goofy stories with Dave Craig, interactions with him?
The one that he got mad at me about was that, he had that kind of a bad problem with fumbling and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he got, and again, he was right to get mad at me on this. So as he came close, Dan Fouts held the record for the number of fumbles. Okay. And so, what I ended up doing is that as he got close to the record, I can't remember if it was like 108 or whatever it was, I called Dan Fouts for a story, and because Dan's such a good guy too, that I mean he kind of laughed through it and all this stuff, because you know we were thinking there should be a big ceremony, you know, with Dan Fouts there, and all of a sudden they both fumble the ball and stuff like that, and so I had fun writing it. He didn't have fun reading it. And so he got very upset about that. Now, it's understandable because, again, you don't want to make fun of a bad situation, and the fumbles were bad. But, you know, he was such a good guy. I mean, I think it was kind of interesting that he came out of a college, Milton College, that no longer exists. So how do you go back to your alma mater? Well, it's no longer there. So it's like that. But he was such a fun guy in the locker room. He was very positive and just very good. I mean, you know, when you start to look at the Seahawks quarterbacks, and again, you know, he still unfortunately hasn't made the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and I think it's going to be hard. I know that each year, and Dave, you can tell Dave Craig this, I'm one of the ones that puts his name back in for consideration. Because, you know, he'll be off the list because he doesn't get enough votes. But then I'm the one, and I'm sure there may be a couple others, that put his name in every year to see if there's a chance.
How does he stack up numbers-wise? I don't know his numbers off the top of my head, but is he? I mean, he had a long career, so is he in the same neighborhood as some guys that are in the Hall of Fame in terms of his numbers?
Well, again, you're talking different eras because, I mean, you know, he wasn't in – I mean, you know, he was just kind of – in the beginning of the passing era, because I mean that kind of started in 1981, and you know it was basically Bill Walsh and that basketball type offense that he had, the West Coast offense, and so he's not going to have the passing yards and the passing attempts and all the different things, you know, that you have for like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady and some of the others. You're not going to have the 4,000 yard seasons, but you know, for his time, I mean, he was pretty good. In fact, one of the things, you know, I chart everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things I try to do is get as many of the Pro Bowl alternates as possible. And so, because, you know, you want to see who gets consideration to go to the Pro Bowl. And usually in most years, Dave was like the sixth or seventh Pro Bowl alternate in the conference. And I always remember is that the one year, I think he was the seventh, he ended up going to the Pro Bowl because everybody else decided not to. And so it's just, I mean, just a great guy. Fun guy, you know, talked to him through the years, but really liked him.
Yeah, we used to tease him all the time when he made the Pro Bowl. It's like, yeah, a couple of planes crashed and two guys got sick, so Dave's in the Pro Bowl. No, I went over there one time. I was in Hawaii, and he was at the Pro Bowl, and he's like, hey, I can get you tickets. Come on over. So I hopped an island over there. It was the only time I went to the Pro Bowl. It was the closest I got to the Pro Bowl. But yeah, I mean, 38,000 yards, John, 261 touchdowns over 19 years. So, and there, Bob Condotta had a stat, I'm trying to remember. It was something about, like, if he started, you know, as a starter, he didn't have a losing record ever, all but one year, or something like that. So, you know, he was on teams where he didn't start, and then they kind of went back and forth, but... But anyway, yeah, he was – and then I was going to say, John, were you the guy that made the small hands comment about Dave Craig?
No.
Soap dish hands?
No. Okay. That was not me.
Don't
put me in that one. It's like I was in trouble enough for the fumble thing with Dan Fouts. So it's like I didn't want to get into double trouble. You know, but you know, you can make the argument, and I hope I'm not slighting him, that you know, he's the third best quarterback in Seahawk history. Obviously, Russell Wilson's number one, and then debates between Matt Hasselbeck and him. And, you know, he certainly took teams to the playoffs and everything else. And you can debate. I mean, I don't know, Dave. I mean, I know he's a close friend. Would you put him above Hasselbeck or below Hasselbeck?
Yeah, it's a tough one just because, you know, Hasselbeck's numbers are better and what he's done and everything. He's more of a classic quarterback. But Dave was such a competitor. That's the thing, John. Like, if you had, you know, as far as a personality goes, you know, I would put Dave Craig right up there with Elway as far as, like, a winning attitude. Always thinks he can, you know, get you there. Always thinks he can win. And that was the beauty of him. And there's no better example than the 1990 win in Kansas City that we talked about, where he was sacked, what, seven times
seven
by Derek
times,
Thomas?
Yeah.
Yeah, and actually it was
through the touchdown pass at the end of what, Paul Scansey, I think.
Paul Scansey, exactly. We won 17-16, but he actually got out of the eighth sack that Derek Thomas would have had on him.
Mm-hmm.
And he spun out of it and then threw the – so, I mean, from that standpoint, I would put him ahead of Matt Hasselbeck.
Okay.
But as far as the numbers go, you know, I'm just going to put it this way. If I'm choosing quarterbacks, it's my turn to pick, and it's between Dave Craig and Matt Hasselbeck just because I played with him, you know, and I'm not slighting Matt Hasselbeck, I'd pick Dave Craig.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It's like the numbers – You can't throw completely into the mix. I mean, I think you have to water down the numbers just because, again, you're going through different eras.
Yeah.
I mean, here with Matt Hasselbeck, I mean, he's there with Mike Holmgren and the West Coast offense, which, of course, was going to pass the ball more. So Matt's numbers are going to be better. And, you know, Dave Craig was a running offense. I mean, Chuck did not like to run pass the ball as much. And so the numbers aren't going to be the deciding factor. But I think you may have hit on it. You know, Dave can be number two because of all the competitive things that he did, the wins that he had, all those things.
Yeah, there was a play that he had against, I think it was against the Rams, where I think it was a fumbled snap. The D lineman comes across, tries to pick the ball up and doesn't get it. Dave picks the ball up, or it bounces into his hands somehow, and he throws a touchdown pass.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the kind of guy that he was. So anyway, that's enough about Dave Craig.
Nah, it was a fun call. He's a fun guy. I love hearing him talk, and especially when it's you two going back. I think we should bring Paul Moyer into the mix.
My only disappointment, Bob.
What?
Is that I know I talked to him when he was starting to do a broadcasting career. I just wish he would have continued doing it.
Yeah.
I mean, because I think he'd be good at doing it. When I heard him, I heard good things. I just feel bad that he didn't continue.
I think the challenge for him would be focus. Just he seems to pinball around. You know, he's kind of got this manic energy. Mm-hmm. He's kind of always just bouncing around from topic to topic. And so maybe that would be hard to pin him down.
Well, I heard that he didn't want to buy any suits.
Is that what
it is? he thought that the network should buy him a suit in order to be on television. I'm joking.
That's when you come from Milton College, you think that way.
Well, and that's the thing, John. I remember having this conversation with Dave Craig, and he was like, yeah, well, I go, where'd you go to school? He's like, Milton College, but, you know, there is no Milton College anymore. I mean, and I was like, you mean the football program? He's like, no, the school.
The school, yeah.
Yeah, they turned it into a Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
So anyway, yeah, Dave, I mean, very unlikely. The awesome story, though. You love guys like that, you know, kind of like Tony Romo.
Right.
I mean, wasn't he an undrafted free
undrafted,
agent?
Undrafted, correct.
Out of what, Eastern Illinois.
Where Sean Payton was a quarterback.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, those kinds of stories, I you get kind of a rubber band effect that, like, you like these guys so much more just knowing where they came from. And, you know, it's not like John Elway coming out of Stanford. It's Dave Craig coming out of Milton College. Love it.
Hey, John, we were playing a cut earlier from Mike Tice's son, Nate Tice. I don't know if you've heard him speak before.
I've never heard Nate, no.
He was doing a podcast or something, and they were talking about Russell Wilson. I want to play you this cut. And listen, nobody's angry about it. It's just, it's interesting. Dave and I were talking about the fact that anytime there's struggles with Russell, doesn't matter what he's achieved in the past or what sort of records he's set, if there's a downtime, a struggle, his height becomes the issue. Here's what Nate Tice said.
That's what's so hard with him, is because he does so many quarterback things well, but then he's like these real simple things. It's almost like
he's like sunshine from Remember the Titans, where like the 50-yard bomb is easier than the 2-yard throw right in front of his face. And that's kind of how it is. And it's always how he's kind of going to be. It's just that's where the height comes into play. It's not balls getting batted down. It's just those little that 5 to 6, 7 yard area right over the ball that's really hard to see for Russ. And time and time again, it's shown that he's not great with it.
What do you think? I just, again, not a big deal, but it's just interesting. It comes up when things don't go right. His height is problematic.
Yeah, but again, it's like it's like Kyler Murray is shorter than he is, and Drew Brees wasn't much taller than he was. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, he's a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. And, you know, he does get those like 8 to 10 yard crossing patterns or a little short stuff over to Tyler Lockett. I mean, he gets some passes to the tight end in the short areas. I mean, yeah, he's not. I mean, are you really going to take the ball and throw it 2 to 3 yards in the middle of the field? No. That's not the game. I mean, the game is to at least have some separation away from the cornerbacks and then to be able to go ahead and, get some plays. And, I mean, he completes, 65% of his passes? I mean, you know, it's like – but the height thing, I mean, again, you can use it as an excuse, but what excuses does he have to call upon?
Hey, John, did you see this story on the Titans? It's kind of a Mike Vrabel move. They're signing former world champion wrestler Adam Kuhn to play offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I've always said, you know, the wrestlers are the ones that were, you know, as far as being in a fight or whatever, they were always the toughest one. But yeah, what do you know about this move?
I mean, what he is like 26 years
26.
Old. Yeah, he's 6'2", 265, I think he is. And obviously, I guess, I mean, he follows that Tom Cable belief, or at least Tom Cable is always a believer. It's like, hey, if you have a wrestling background, you could be pretty good for an offensive line because, one, you're going to be a decent enough athlete, and, two, you know how to get low and do all those different things and try to block. So we'll see. I mean, again, it's a long shot. I mean, nobody had heard of this guy outside of wrestling, and he's not played football, but I give him a better chance than Tim Tebow.
Add okay. To squeeze in
John,
a Tebow shot.
We were not going to bring up Tim Tebow, just for the record. You brought him up.
Okay, I just did, yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
John, the 253 asking, John, where does Michael Dixon's new contract rank him amongst punters? And then they wrote, sorry, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, because they say it's a 4-year deal. I don't know if it's a 3-year deal or a 4-year deal, but if it's a 3-year extension, because, again, what happens a lot of times is that, teams will look at this, not agents or media or stuff like that, because you look at it as new money. And so if he's signed now through 2024, I guess you could say that he's one of the highest paid punters in football because he's over $4 million. But if, I mean, a 3-year deal will be over $4 million. And so I just have to see how that breaks down. But I mean, it's being reported as 4 years, 14.5. But, you know, the team spin, and I'm not saying the Seahawks are spinning it because they're not, but, you know, the team spin is always going to be, well, yeah, he was in the last year of his contract. If you include that, you got the, you know, the ability to, you know, get that. But I think my guess is probably a 3-year deal. And if that's the case, he's one of the highest, if not the highest paid punter in football. The one thing that is interesting is that, you know, this is a move because he was $2.4 million on his restricted tag, and, you know, a little bit higher because he's been to the Pro Bowl, because normally as a draft choice it would be 2.318, and so now he gets 2.4. But my guess is that's they'll probably shave about maybe $1 million or maybe $800,000 under the cap.
Hey, John, I know you're not a Jersey guy and everything, but we got, you know, Carlos Dunlap,
mm-hmm.
Quandre Diggs, Akilah Witherspoon switching to single digit numbers now, and Brady's been complaining about that. No big deal for Quandre Diggs and Akilah Witherspoon, I would say. But Carlos Dunlap, maybe some, you know, as far as identifying. Although I would say that number 6 is awfully big on him.
Yeah,
maybe he's a D lineman, but you anticipate any kind of problems. It just seems like something to talk about in the offseason. It seems like one of those things that's just going to kind of...
No, I go with Tom Brady on this one. I anticipate a lot of problems.
You think so?
Oh, particularly. I mean, the problems are not going to be on offense, I don't think, as much. It's going to be on defense, because now it's like you don't know if the number that's going to be covering is going to be, and particularly in pass coverage, is it going to be a linebacker, a safety, whoever it's going to be. So I can see a bunch of problems with that.
So you think the quarterbacks are going to have a hard time what? I mean, you're still looking at a different colored jersey, and you're not going to throw it near that guy. If you can avoid it, you're going to throw it to the guy that is wearing the same jersey you're throwing. So what, I guess I'm trying to understand, why does it matter what the number is?
Well, what it matters is that, again, I mean, you know, particularly the way the game is evolving in the secondary, I mean, you want to see, okay, is this guy going to be a safety? Because if he is, then, you know, he's got a better chance to at least, you know, get deep on him or do something, because he's not going to have the speed of an outside cornerback. And so that's where I think is going to be a problem. And you're seeing right now, I mean, you know, the growing trend for safeties to play linebacker. And so now all of a sudden, how do you identify where the defense is going to be if you can't automatically recognize a number? I just think it causes extra complications for the quarterback, because number one, you got to worry about the play call. You've got to be worried about getting the play out on time. You've got to then start to make audibles if you need to, and you need to do this before the clock runs out.
Well, I guess I would say the one thing is personnel groupings, as far as the recognition goes. It may trip people up as far as what you had. And offensive linemen aren't allowed to do it, right? I mean, you can't be an offensive guard or tackle and wear number six, right?
I don't think so, no.
You know, so, I mean, it's only going so far, but I don't know. It's just kind of weird.
To me, it's just another one of those wasted rules. I mean, again, they do about one of these every year, and it's like, you know, that's certainly the pass interference rule of a couple years ago. That was a disaster. You know, some of the replay stuff that they want to keep adding, that's hasn't worked out as well as you'd like it to. And then this one, to me, just caused, I mean, again, this is an offense. They want it to be an offensive game. Why would you want to create more problems for offenses? And this causes problems for offenses.
I guess we'll find out. John, I saw this big piece written by Mike Florio on the, he's saying the headline reads, NFLPA should allow vaccinated reporters to return to the locker room, because this is in response to the story that while the stadiums are going to be full, it looks like across the league, they'll be allowed full attendance, that there'll be no locker room access. Where are you at on that?
Well, it's even worse, because, I mean, this was probably the stupidest thing he's ever put out, and I think he's starting to retract on it right now. And he's put out a lot of dumb stuff. But, I mean, he came back and he says what they should do is have a one-year experiment where the players aren't mandatory to talk. And it's like...
At all.
And that's the one that just... I mean, again, as a former president of the Pro Football Writers, it's like, Mike, thank God you're not in the Pro Football Writers, because we would bounce you out immediately. Because, again, it's tough enough not having the locker room access. And you can understand they're not going to have the locker room access again this year, whether it's going to be during the week or whether it's going to be at games. I mean, all you're going to have is, you know, assembled right in front of, the VMAC with press conferences where the players have enough distance and the coaches have enough distance, they can be there for that. But to me, I mean, what he's suggesting is an absolute and total disaster, and he should be banished for it.
Wow.
Banished to like a desert isle, you think?
Take away his computer.
Or go back to West Virginia, where he was raised. So,
you're not a Florio guy.
No, I like him, but again, it's like he just comes up with the stupidest stuff sometimes. I mean, because remember, he is a lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. And so he always would take a contrarian opinion. I mean, because here he is. I mean, you know, he's on the NFL games, and sometimes he'll just rip the NFL for something that shouldn't be ripped on. I mean, that's just the way he is. But I mean, this one was the worst one he's ever done.
So you agree with the headline, at least on this story, that they should allow vaccinated reporters to return to the locker rooms?
Yes, 100%.
So you don't like that he's walking that back?
No, I mean, he's asking for a one-year experiment where the players aren't mandatory asked to talk, period.
At all.
So in other words, you know, because he says, oh, yeah, it's like, I bet you just about all of them will want to talk. No, they won't. They don't want to take the time. I mean, you know, it's like you just get done with a game, right? And so you want to get out of the locker room as fast as possible to go to dinner, be with family, do whatever you want to do. And so you're not going to have anybody or very few players that are going to be wanting to talk. And so it's like he's completely wrong on this one.
John, I'm asking you a question. I hope I was good to you when I was a player.
You were?
Was I a willing
interview?
I don't remember. And so people are saying, like, what kind of guy were you? I'm like, I always kind of liked talking about the game afterwards, just kind of breaking it down. But we were talking about, you know, some of the go-to guys like Mac Strong and Matt Hasselbeck and
Eugene Robinson,
you know. And what about on this current team? Because you've gone in and talked to these guys a lot. You know, Dwayne Brown's always really good, right?
No doubt.
You know, so, I mean, I just, to me,
Bobby,
I never.
Bobby Wagner, KJ Wagner. Wright, when he was here.
Yeah. Oh, that's makes me sad to hear you say it that way. Mm-hmm. When he was here.
Past yeah. tense.
But anyway, I just thought, you know, it's, there's just, you know, as far as the Zoom thing goes and everything, that was fine last year, but there's just nothing like being there and talking to those guys in person.
No, and you think about this, and again, you can understand it with the pandemic and all the different stuff and worries about, you know, because so many players don't even want to get vaccinated. In fact, there was a story out today that there's four teams in this league that have assistant coaches that refuse to get vaccinations, and they will go from tier one to tier two. So they're coaches, but they're coaches that can't be on the field coaching their players.
That's not going to work out well.
No, that's not going to work out well at all. It's not a very good thing, so stay tuned on that front.
John, you doing your show tomorrow?
Yes, from 8 until 11.
Taking calls?
I will be taking my phone calls.
There you go. Give John Clayton a call on tomorrow, 8 to 11, and we will talk to you on Monday, John.
Okay, thanks.
There you go. If you missed any of today's Cold Hard Facts, brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, just download the podcast at 710sports.com. Coming up, could Alex Rodriguez, of all people, possibly return to Seattle and bring an NBA franchise with him? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
This happy hour brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We've got Mean Tex coming up in the next hour. We'll turn you over to the Mariners pregame show at 5:30. So Mean Tex coming up in the 5 o'clock segment. You've still got time, 710-710, the Mac and Jack's text line. It seems like most of the material centers around your interception of Dan Marino that we posted on social media today. Again, in case you're just tuning in, we posted the video of Dave Wyman picking off the Hall of Famer, Dan Marino, and then most people commenting on how the play ended. You can check it out for yourself on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob, or at Bob Stelton on Twitter. It's available in both spots, so check that out.
I would just say, you know, watch me catch the ball, and then just turn it off.
Yeah.
Then everything will be just fine.
Just, you know, spoil alert, you didn't score a touchdown. That's all they need to know.
That's far from it. Somebody said, because I kind of dive at the end. Somebody says, Wyman diving for the end zone 30 yards short.
Yeah, you came up a little short.
Yeah. You know what sucks about that, too, because I kept track of it. We went down, and great field goal kicker, Norm Johnson, but because of that, we got nothing. We ended up settling for a field goal attempt, and it either got blocked or he missed it.
Oh.
So it was all for naught, and it was probably because if I'd cut back upfield on Dan Marino and gotten an extra 10, 12 yards.
Maybe. You know, Norm's got to do his job. I love Norm. He's got to do his job, man.
Yeah.
The offense has got to move the ball. You gave him an extra possession there. You took one away from the Hall of Famer Dan Marino, gave your offense an extra possession, and they've got to capitalize.
I feel bad mentioning Norm Johnson because Norm Johnson's fantastic. The other thing I regret is that he does listen to the show, and I hope he's not listening right now.
He was always good. I used to go to his card store all the time in the Crossroads Mall.
Norm's an awesome guy.
Yeah, very cool.
Hey, and very good kicker.
This story has been floating around for a little bit now, but it's interesting because Alex Rodriguez is set to become a minority owner of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's got partners who have the big bucks, and the purchase is set to take place. They'll take over ownership of them in the Minnesota Lynx. And this, according to sources, you're not sure what's true or not, but according to multiple sources, he wants to bring the team here to Seattle. And we know how people in Seattle feel about A-Rod. I'm on the island. I've always defended him. You know, yeah, he said he wanted to stay. That was before he was offered $250 million to go play in Texas, who I believe won the Division III of the previous five seasons before that. So I know what they ended up becoming, but he didn't go join a junk team. I think they spent a boatload of money that year on him. I think Chan Ho Park, Ken Caminiti, they spent a bunch of money, and they had Juan Gonzalez and Pudge. And so they looked to be a good team in the making who had success. Anyway, I never held it against him. I was bummed he left like everybody else, but again, you turned down $250 million? I don't think so.
Yeah, I texted in to 710-710. Are people still mad about that?
Yeah, they say he lied, that he said he wanted to stay here and play for a winner. And I'm thinking, okay, again, Texas, if I recall correctly, had won the division three of the previous five seasons and spent a truckload of money, not just on him, but the premier free agent pitcher. and they had the hitters. So they were spending money when they were thought to be a contending team. Didn't work out that way. But either way, he left. People hated him. They still hate him today. Would that wash away some of that hate if he brought back an NBA franchise to the city? If he were the impetus for that, he were the driving force behind bringing a team back to Seattle?
Well, absolutely, I think. And, you know, we talked a little bit, you and I were talking yesterday, I think, about Brian Bosworth and when he came back here and raised the 12th man flag. Now, there was a few people that felt kind of slighted by him. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What was the some smile
people,
for?
Well, some people questioning why he was doing that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I thought it was appropriate. And, you know, so my point is, comparing him to Boz is, like, when time passes, like, you know, remember when Brett Favre, I mean, he was much hated when he went to the Jets, and then he ends up in Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of the Green Bay Packer fans are like, oh, we hate Brett Favre. Well, you know, fast forward 5 years, he's out with Bart Starr on the field, everybody loving him. You know, he's the one of the sons of Green Bay. Everybody just thinks the world of him. That happens after a few years. Now, not only is that going to happen, you know, the memories are going to fade. And, if, you know, the more you hear, like, of course he took the $250 million, wouldn't you? Because I remember people out there with, like, dollar bills and fishing rods.
Oh, yeah,
and
they let him have it.
I'm not sure how they got that into the stadium. Probably couldn't do that now.
But, no, not these days.
Yeah, like, what are you doing with that fishing rod? So, yeah, that was all, you know, a long time ago, and that's passed. But then you also solve the problem of bringing – I mean, this is one of the reasons why the NBA is just – like, nobody wants to even talk about it in Seattle, because everybody's still bitter over that whole thing, and he's the guy that fixes it. I would say totally forget. Who's going to hate A-Rod after that? I mean –
I don't know. I'm surprised people still hate him now. I mean, it comes down to, you didn't want the guy to leave because he was a great player.
Yeah.
He said he wanted to be here. I was disappointed like everybody else. But then I don't think he was ever in a position to think he was going to be offered $252 million. I believe the Mariners offered him, what was it, $111, $113? Mm. I mean, to be outbid by over $100 million back then. You know, this is before the days of these contracts with Tatis and Giancarlo Stanton and all these deals. I mean, that was just another hemisphere you didn't even really imagine back then. So the idea that he had the audacity to take it, and, oh, he's greedy. How many of you out there wouldn't have taken that? I'm sorry. It's just, you're offered a quarter of a billion. That can change somebody's mind. So yeah. Call him greedy, whatever. He did roids. He was not unique. I know he's screwed up along the way. But if this guy brings the NBA back to Seattle, you're telling me you wouldn't forgive, you wouldn't have a different feeling about the guy, where you had a franchise ripped from your city? Now, ultimately, I'd just love to have an expansion team. I don't want to see another city go through that, because we know what it feels like out here.
Well, the interesting response is, 206 says, why would we want another city's stolen team? I would hate A-Rod more. Really? You know, the other guy says, what was I doing with a fishing rod? I'm tying dollar bills to it and going fishing for A-Rod. I get that part about, you know, being on the receiving end of a team that's getting yanked away from another city. I do understand that part. And I wish it was more about expansion. I mean, that would be the thing that would really just be clean for everybody. You wouldn't have that on your conscience. But I think once you get the Sonics back here and start putting the, you know, banners back up in the rafters and all that stuff, that people are going to forget about it. Now, I see that also there was something about possibly, well, they'll be stranding the Minnesota Lynx, which is the sister team, WNBA team, there. Yeah. But it's kind of weird, because it's like you're leaving them there to come here to a city that
has
a WNBA team that doesn't have a, you know, a brother team. So what's, I don't know. I mean, I don't see how that's going to be any kind of a hang up. I'm sure for the WNBA fans there, it's going to be tough. But yeah, I've heard this before about not wanting another, you know, it used to be Sacramento for a while.
Right,
there was
right.
the thought maybe it was going to be the Sacramento Kings. Does that bother you, or would you just be? I would just think that having an NBA team in Seattle would just wipe everything out. You know, like any ill will about A-Rod, any worries about, we ripped it out of another, you know, city's hands. I just think once you get basketball back here, people are going to be plenty excited and forgiving about any of that stuff in the past.
Yeah, and as far as, listen, if I have my choice, I want an expansion team. I don't want to do that to another city. I get it. But if they're going to be moved regardless, if they're just saying, hey, it's not tenable here in Minnesota, we need a new building, we need that, we're not getting what we need, whatever it is, if it's going to be moved elsewhere and Seattle's going, no, not us, we don't want to do that, and it lands in another city, then I'm going to be going, well, what good did that do us? The team still moved. They still had their hearts broken. I'd rather have a team here.
Right.
Expansion would be my first choice. If I can't have an expansion team, then a team that's going to move one way or the other, bring it here. Mm. That's how I would view it. But if I would just say, I would just be curious from the fans that really have a problem with A-Rod still to this day, if that would change your opinion of him at all. I would think it would have to, wouldn't it? I mean, to bring the NBA that was here for 40 years, the first team to give this city a title in 1979, you know, the glory days of Kemp right. and Peyton and George Karl and those teams that were so fun to watch, and the finals against Michael Jordan and the Bulls, and just everything that was that team. They own this city the way the Seahawks do now. So to have that back has got to have some value or soothe some hurt feelings, I would hope, in regards to A-Rod.
Yeah.
But who knows? I mean, these are just sources saying, and maybe this is nothing to it, and they'll stay in Minnesota. Who knows? But this is just kind of one of those stories that's been percolating, and, you know, they keep reinforcing that. Sources saying A-Rod wants to bring him back. He wants to bring him to Seattle. Not sure if he'll get his way, but
it's pretty interesting the sort of emotion that it digs up
yeah.
out of people. Whether
yeah.
it's A-Rod leaving originally or, you know, having the Sonics ripped out of here in Seattle, and lots of people responding.
All right, coming up, are two rival NFL coaches actually best friends? We'll hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, this is pretty interesting. If you guys remember last year during the pandemic, Pete Carroll was on with Steve Kerr, and he had that podcast, the Flying Coach Podcast. All right, now you guys are listening. Okay, so Pete Carroll was on with Steve Kerr last
Flying
year.
Flying Coach Podcast.
Flying Coach Podcast. They're not doing it this year. So now Sean McVay has taken over. He's hosting it with Peter Schrager. And they had Cliff Kingsbury on. And these two guys were getting very friendly. It's very interesting that two rival coaches in the division were getting so friendly, and Kingsbury was ripping McVay for his draft day attire.
99% of us have not starred on a reality TV show, so I'm wondering when they tell you, take your shirt off, dive in the pool, drink rosé, shoot some hoops, like, what is going through your mind? Do you know that this is going to be a tough look, or you just go for it?
You know, you came out shots fired. What the hell? I love it.
I'm giving the people what they want.
It's a great question, though.
I figured since I wasn't as swaggy as you doing the stanky leg dance off at Texas Tech, that I had to be ready to go. And it was a regrettable moment.
There's Cliff Kingsbury and Leave It to Beaver. McVay, his voice, he sounds like a little kid.
Yeah, and he's stanky leg.
The stank leg.
That's
I get the feeling that Lefko doesn't like it when coaches are friends with one another.
No, I think it's interesting. You don't usually see that dynamic, right? Or would you?
Well, you wouldn't have seen Pete and Harbaugh in a situation like this.
I was just going to say, I would love to have that back. That was fun.
Oh, it was awesome.
That was fun.
It was fun to hate them.
Yeah.
And it was easy. He made it really easy.
Harbaugh, definitely.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's one of those guys that is entirely unaware, like some people that we know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That are just entirely unaware of, you know, the fact that they're just grinding on people.
He's like, you know, he's like is Trevor Bauer, who I think is aware at times, but there are other times he seems to be genuinely confused as to why people are responding the way they do to him.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, I don't necessarily mind that these guys are buddy-buddy. I don't think, you know, they're giving each other a hard time. It's kind of funny, but I don't know. I guess in the back of people's minds, especially when it comes to football, they really want, and I always say this, I really long for the days, call me sentimental, but I long for the days when we all hated each other.
Yeah.
It was so much better. Yeah, it was really fun back in those days. And, you know, there was no swapping of jerseys or anything. I almost got in a fight with a guy after a game one time, and he would have deserved it. But yeah, that was the way it used to be, and now it's all buddy buddy. I don't know if that takes anything away from it. Is there a huge rivalry between Arizona and the Rams? No, not really. Where would you say? I mean, it's right now. Is it firmly Los Angeles? You know, we talk about the A's and the AL West,
right?
For the Mariners, easily. Well,
Houston.
That's not true. Bob actually is Houston.
Yeah, I hate Houston more.
I still Oakland. I still that still bothers me. But
they're working their way up the charts, though.
But right now, is it the Rams or is it the 49ers?
I think it's going to be the four. I think the 49ers took a 1 year reprieve with the injuries and everything, and they weren't good, so you didn't really consider them. But
we almost felt sorry for them last year.
Almost. I mean, we sort of marveled at the level of injury they sustained, and then you forgot about them because they weren't good. But I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be the team that you're truly going to battle with in terms of trying to win this division. I think the Rams will be there too, but 49ers worry me more than the Rams do.
Sweeping the dial.
I think you guys will enjoy this one, Bob, especially. So last night on Inside the NBA, when they wrap it up, when teams get eliminated, they put up a big graphic and it says Gone Fishing, and they put the team up there and they put a lot of famous people in there. And the guys were confused and they're trying to figure out who they had in a wheelchair. And Charles Barkley gave an explanation.
Who's the guy in the wheelchair? Is that from the movie? Well,
that would be Skip Bayless if I ever got him in a room by myself.
Ever gets Skip Bayless along, that's he's going to need a full body cast.
All right, that's fishing.
Love Charles even more. I agree with him 1,000%.
He says things so, he's so quick and he's so casual about it.
Yeah, his delivery is funny. It's just everything about him cracks me up.
Can we hear that one more time? I just want to hear the part with Barkley.
Who's the guy in the wheelchair? Is that from the movie?
That would be Skip Bayless if I ever got him in a room by myself.
Remember when he was talking about...
He's going to need a full body cast.
All right. He's going to need a full body cast.
Remember when Shaq had his cream soda? He's like, yeah, you with your cream soda spreading diabetes around the world. He just always has these little one-liners that are just hilarious. I cannot get enough of Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, the rumor seems to be that Aaron Rodgers is going to Denver. Now, who knows when that will happen, if it happens. But Damian Woody really likes the move, even if they are in the Chiefs division. Because, yeah, while Denver might have the worst quarterback situation right now, he thinks they could become a Super Bowl contender if Rodgers is there.
Now, if we're talking about Aaron Rodgers in Denver, okay. Now we're talking about something. Because Denver has a legit defense. Denver has legit weapons on the outside. And you plug Aaron Rodgers into that equation, now we're talking about something.
Yeah, and they got a corner in, is it Patrick Surtain that they got there in the first round? Mm-hmm. So decent defense. And, yeah, I just think Aaron Rodgers, I mean, there's not many teams where he wouldn't bring a lot to, you know, other than Kansas City, Tampa, and the Seahawks. But that'd be interesting to see because now you've got Kansas City, who's obviously really good. You got the Chargers on the uptick, and they have their quarterback of the future, it looks like, Justin Herbert. And then now all of a sudden you get a really good defense, like he said, with a really, really good quarterback. That would be maybe the AFC West might take over the NFC West as the toughest division.
I would just be happy he's in the AFC.
Yeah.
I don't want him to show up in the NFC or the – I don't know that there's –
San Fran.
Yeah, they just went after Trey Lance. I don't know if they'd make that move, so I feel better about that that being less likely. But, yeah, I still want to watch the guy play. I want to be able to appreciate him from afar, and I would appreciate him more in the AFC.
What if he says, hey, I want to retire in 2 years. I'll come out there and teach Trey Lance, you know, and I'll play and put him on the Aaron Rodgers program, Trey Lance, that is, you know, where you sit behind Favre for a couple years, and then just kind of learn, ugh. That'd be terrible.
I don't want that either.
Be terrible.
I don't want that either. No bueno. All right, this happy hour is brought to you by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Coming up, where do the Mariners need to spend in order to become a contender? We'll talk about that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.